What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Meeting Up podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about your favorite filmmakers and franchises and the deeper meaning within them. Now we are here finally talking about family and coronas with the Fast and Furious franchise. We are talking about Fast and Furious 1 through 4, meaning we're talking about the Fast and the Furious, the first one, Too Fast, Too Furious, Tokyo Drift, and a little bit on Fast and Furious. We'll see if we have time. Otherwise, I am here with the crew, Sabrina, RB3, and joining us, we have Brandon Hanna. What's up, Brandon?
Hello. I'm so excited to be on the show today.
Happy to have you on.
Yeah, we've been talking being on, so I'm glad.
Yeah, we've
happened.
Heard all about your guys' binge watching of the Fast and Furious franchise. I'm honestly most excited to talk to you, Sabrina, because this is your first time watching this series all the way through. I can get to my story and my connection with the series because I do have one, but I want to hear your first impression on these first few films in the Fast and Furious franchise.
Yeah, I think they're a lot of fun. The thing is, I don't know anything about these movies. I have seen maybe little glimpses as my dad was watching on TV and I just walked past him. I don't know anything. I went into the first film completely blind and I had an absolute blast. The first film out of these four is still the one that stood out to me the most. I thought everything that they did with all these characters and introducing like the Toretto's and their experiences, I loved it. It's when we got to the later films that I'm like, okay, like it's fine. I love Tyrese's character in Too Fast, Too Furious, but I was missing out on like that family aspect of it. Like, I don't know. I just didn't feel the warmth in that one that I felt in the first one.
So out of the four films, which one would you say, out of the four ones that I mentioned up top, which one would you say is the one that you liked the most or that you appreciated the most?
The first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brandon, what about you, man? What is your story / connection to this franchise?
Yes. So for me, I love all these films. I know Too Fast, Too Furious gets a lot of hate. I know Sabrina didn't particularly enjoy
it.
But that's the movie that I just like grew up watching with my dad anytime it came on TV. Oh, and I plucked her headphones out. Hopefully that doesn't happen again. I do that a lot. My bad. Movie I watched a lot with my dad. And so I just have like so many memories. It's just like sitting on the couch on like a lazy Sunday, watching Too Fast, Too Furious. One of my best friends from back home, he's a huge Fast and Furious fan. So, you know, I remember watching the original movie with him and now the subsequent movies as they've been released in theaters. So it's just, it is a bit of a family affair, you know, if you will, enjoying these movies.
Yeah, it really is. And it's interesting because the first film, The Fast and the Furious, came out in 2001, which was right at the height of this new wave of street racing, of import cars, of Japanese cars kind of taking over the American streets, which is now in its full effect. If you live anywhere in America, you notice how many Japanese cars are currently on the street. And obviously the street racing culture was something that was a big deal in the Los Angeles area, which is, I believe, where the first film takes place. RB3, what's your connection to this movies?
Well, I've been a big fan of the Fast and Furious franchise for a long time. As people know, I was like the sole defender of these movies for a long time on the Schmoes Know movie show back in the day. A lot of people used to clown them. I'm always the biggest supporter of them. For me, it's a little bit different though. I'm a little bit flipped from Sabrina. I actually think the later movies are probably where my fandom probably spurred more like passionately. But I mean, I enjoy the early movies too. I do remember watching each of them. I have particular memories watching each of them, like as a kid. Like I remember watching the first Fast and Furious movie at home on TV. I remember the second one seeing at the barbershop. You know, it was like that perfect like black action movie that they kept showing that was being made in like the early 2000s. And then the third one I didn't see until actually later on, but the fourth one I remember seeing in theaters with my boy Adeshola from middle school. Shout out to Adeshola. We went to see it in theaters. And that was when I was like, all right, this is getting into some next level stuff. This was like I consider the fourth one to be the what's the third Harry Potter movie? Prisoner of Azkaban. I consider that to be the Prisoner of Azkaban of this franchise.
So. That's a good analogy. I like that.
That's so interesting. All right, I'm about to blow y'all's minds. I saw the first one in theaters in 2001 because I'm old. But also, I have a crazy weird connection with these films because in 2001, I remember this era because obviously I was a kid, but my brother was a big car head, still is a big car head. And he does this for a living. Like, he literally works on cars for a living. He's that stereotypical kind of mechanic guy, because that's what he does. He literally still does this till this day. So I have that connection with my family. So he wanted to see it in theaters, and he was obsessed with the street racing culture and this crazy, like, ghetto / hip hop. A lot of stuff that wasn't really being made, back in the day, or at least not too much in the mainstream culture. So it was kind of a big deal when this movie came out, and the opening credits, you have Fast and Furious and a hip hop song is like raging in the background. That was a big deal. And it's also kind of a big deal having this cast of characters that feels very, appropriate to what it is in the street racing culture, which is a lot of Asians, a lot of Mexicans, a lot of black dudes, and a couple Italians with the Toretto's. That's what makes the Fast and Furious kind of like the first thing you notice is kind of that. And that's kind of what has stuck with the entire franchise to this day, to the current movies with Fast 8 and Fast 9, is that these cast of characters is a cast of people that feels like this is a lived in world with people from all over the world, from different cultures and backgrounds and races that come together with this mentality and this culture that fits them. So I don't know if you guys felt that too, because to me, that's kind of the biggest standing out point when you see the first racing scene in the first Fast and Furious movie, when you meet Hector. And it's like, he literally is like, "Yo, what's up, fool? I'm Hector." And I'm like, "Oh, this is Hector, bro." And he meets Brian, and he's like, "Yo, what's up, man? Brian Spillman." And he says, "Yo, typical white boy name, typical white boy name." And then, here comes Ja Rule, and here comes the Asian homie playing PS2 on his car. And then obviously Toretto comes in with Mia and his crew. And he's going out with Michelle Rodriguez. Like, it feels like a very realistic kind of vibe when it comes to the street racing culture. How'd you feel about that, Sabrina, when you first saw this movie, since it was a week ago since you first saw this movie?
I mean I'm literally only to the fourth one right now, so I'm going through this journey with you guys. But yeah, my dad's a mechanic as well, and so I've learned about like that culture and him growing up in that era, obviously like graduating high school in the mid 90s. So he lived in this kind of world, and he really, really appreciated it. So seeing something like this on screen, like you mentioned, that was lived in, genuinely reflects the culture that they're representing and the places. Los Angeles in the late 90s, early 2000s, this is what it looked like. You had people of all different races. Like, so that was an amazing touch. And I feel like they definitely had that like emphasis on community and family. Like, you felt like even when people are messing around with each other and they're competing with each other, they all still really respect each other. And that's something that really stands out in the first film.
Yeah, I think that's a huge standout. And I want to pass it off, obviously, to you, Brandon. But to me, one of the biggest standing out points in this movie is that it's kind of a fish out of water type scenario. Obviously, we'll get to the Point Break aspect as well. But the Brian character is kind of the one character who does seem like, yo, it's that one white dude, but he's like, yeah, bro, that's my boy, though. That's Brian, man. Brian's the homie. Come here, Brian. Like, it's that one, white homie that everyone's going to love no matter what, whether you're Asian, black, or Latino. Like, that's kind of the Paul Walker's natural charisma and natural character himself. He seemed very much like that super chill surfer dude who just hangs out with like different people on every single day. And I love that community aspect of it. What do you think of that, Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, that's like one of the, great things about these movies is, there is like, that representation. And like you said, it came up at a time where like street racing and all that culture was like really popular. And it's a movie that, it's a movie about family, about found family. Like, so it's about a bunch of, people from all different walks of life coming together and deciding, you know, like, you know what, like, these are my people, like, we're family, we're together, like, no matter what. And so it that kind of transcends past the films themselves into the fandom as well. And now you have, you know, fans of these movies, of this franchise, kind of coming together and bonding over a shared experience from all walks of life. And it's nice to see this theme of the movie kind of, you know, kind of go into the fandom as well and breed that kind of positivity, because people just love these movies.
Yeah, RB3, I know there was an article that came out, I believe, like 5-6 years ago in the Hollywood Reporter, which was saying that part of the success of the Fast and Furious franchise was based on the diversity of the cast and characters, and of how many people come from so many different places. And the fact that that's kind of similar to what the street racing culture can be when it comes to this appreciation, obviously, of cars and fast cars and all that stuff. But I feel like that's one of the biggest selling points of this movie and movies, and what makes it a billion-dollar franchise. How did you feel about that, especially watching the first movie, when you see people from all walks of life, you know, sitting at the same table and having those moments?
Well, I mean, I've always loved and appreciated the familial aspect of it. I think that is something that is dope. I think, you know, if you watch these movies in like the hood, if you watch them in like, you know, Crenshaw, Baldwin theaters, like, or if you watch it in, you know, any kind of like, or Carson, you know, Carson Cinemark, any theater, like close to a community that's like populated with like brown people and black people, it's always like a riot and it's always an experience. I think part of that is because, well, I think a lot of it is because of the diversity itself, but I also think it's because of the actual setup of the movie. And that, you know, a lot of people see this as like more of a criticism of the first Fast and Furious movie. I don't necessarily see it as a criticism, but it is, you know, essentially like a remake of Point Break, you know? So in Point Break, the surfer community is who kind of lures in Keanu Reeves. And in this one, it's the street racing community. And, you know, the surfer community, at least in that movie, is like mostly white people, white guys, you know, whatever. But when you see the street racing community and this rap and this underground and it's kind of secretive and dangerous and criminal, it kind of plays off of the associations of image and hip hop and, you know, of to some extent, like, you know, stereotypes too of what like, of what this culture is, but then it also like is very inviting too, and it lets you come in and like, here, have a beer with these guys, and hey, like, you know, you could be a part of this community too. It's very like welcoming and very like and supportive and enthusiastic. At least it presents it that way in the movies. Like, I don't know if street racing is really like that in real life. Part of me has a feeling like a lot of these street racer guys aren't really that nice. They probably will like shoot you or run you over or something, but at least in this movie, they're presented as nice guys who you want to chill with. So,
yeah, I don't know if I saw that. I kind of took it like that first scene when Brian shows up and Hector comes up to him. He's literally the first dude, and he doesn't care that he's. I mean, he says, "Oh yeah, what's up, white boy?" But it's like it's almost like it's like
playful
vibe. It's like love. It's playful. It's not like hating.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And the first thing he talks about is his car. And he's like, oh yeah, this car is wild, man. And he's like, yeah, bro, it's crazy. And then Ja Rule comes up and he's like, yo, what's up, dude? And Ja Rule is like, just chill. And I feel like that's kind of the point of Point Break too, right? Is like, you're undercover in this different culture that you're not a part of necessarily. And the more time you spend there, the more time you start to question your own authority and your own effect into that when you're like, these guys are just looking out for themselves. These guys are just living their own life. And yes, they might get caught up in certain bad decisions here and there, but for the most part, they're not dangerous. They're not wild. They're not gonna, you know, come into your house and steal your kids. They're just chill family people who just want to help their family out. That's kind of what I took from it.
I think it's a mixture of both of what you guys said. I do think it kind of glamorizes the like lifestyle. And obviously in this film, I don't think that anybody who does like participates in street racing or anything like that is like a bad person. But in a lot of this, you do see, you know, they're dealing with some criminal activity, and it's kind of glamorizing that whole idea. So I think it's a mix of kind of both of what you guys said.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like the criminal aspect definitely comes from like that stereotypical like Asian gang. in the movie, which I mean, obviously they just threw that in there, but from everything else that, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think even like throughout this entire franchise, I think it literally is just like based off of Criminal Activity, because then we meet Tyrese and stuff like that. So that continues. So yes, in this first film, it's with the Toretto's and then the Asian gang. But overall, I do think that's like a through line from what I've seen so far.
Yeah, but I feel like the Criminal Activity they point out is like boosting cars, petty theft. Like, I don't think they say like, yeah, yo, this guy killed 20 people.
And well, I mean, like, nah, but I mean, that's, I mean, but nah, that's why we love them. Like, it's just like regular schmegular crime. It's not like they're like hurting anybody, but I mean, that's not to say they're not criminals. Like, the act of street racing is also a crime too. So
it
I
is.
Mean,
and I'm not trying to justify that. I'm just trying to say like the way they go about it is a way that makes it feel like, what do you do in a situation where all that life has given you is certain situations inside your neighborhood, inside your community, where you're kind of put in this box where the way these people come out, and by these people, I mean the Toretto's, the other homies in the group, is actually kind of positive if you really think about it, instead of going the more violent gang route or the violent crimes kind of sense. They choose the less crimes because they're placed in this scenario where that's kind of their only option. And then obviously in the further films, they kind of choose to use that in a super like, you know, these are the best racers in the world. Now the government has use for them. And obviously we'll get to that in part two. But I feel like in part one, they set up why you love these characters and why you should love these characters and why you're not cheering when Jesse dies. You're not like, yeah, Jesse dies, he's a criminal. Yeah. You go like, oh crap, Jesse. Like, he's a good dude. Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, it's
I'm not saying criminal in a bad way. Like, you're saying, I'm saying it in a bad way. I'm not saying they're criminals in a bad way. I'm just saying they're also, it's the allure is that they are not doing legal things. You know what I mean? Like, the allure, the reason why we are attracted to them is because they're not just like sitting around and like surfing like in Point Break, you know what I mean? Now Point Break had an interesting angle where they were surfing and then they turned out to be bank robbers, and you know they weren't, that's what the investigation was all about, but there wasn't any like active like gang robbery, shooting, like any of that, like up until that point in Point Break and also in Fast and Furious in general. So like I think that's why that comparison is apt. But I also think like the lovable criminal is definitely something that like we come to explore like throughout this whole franchise, because like you said, Sabrina, Tyrese in the very next movie, he's like the ultimate car hopper slash like monster truck, like, you know, coordinator. I don't know what he does. And Ludacris too. They're just everywhere. But even though like you know they're in shady business, you still love them because they're not like crazy or like, you know, doing anything like weird or stupid, you know. So,
and also we have a lot of the times when we do deal with like films that have like crime, and when it's like glamorized, a lot of people still idolize people even if they do go to that extreme. They don't in this franchise, but like look at like Scarface and things like that, like people love that even though they're going way too far. So it's always something about like glamorizing like a criminal lifestyle. I feel like it's exhilarating to watch in our action movies, and that's why people like to see it. So like Fast and Furious, like you said, like it's like pettier, like smaller stuff, and none of these people are bad people at all. They're great people. So that's why I think like people like cling to that.
I feel it differently. I really feel like the whole franchise is about this cop who literally puts down his badge by like, I don't know, the fourth movie or the third movie. And he realizes like, yo, low key, cops are shady. And cops might be worse than these guys. Yeah. I don't think it's saying, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think it's necessarily saying like, yo, be a criminal.
Look at street racing. This shit is fun. So
I think it's more like the way we look at crime and what is crime and what justifies crime and how people are put in different situations and how I can justify something if I'm, you know, a middle class homie living in Wisconsin because I'm like doing this for my family, then they are too, and they're put in the situation where they're doing it for their family too. And I think it's more about relating to people who come from different backgrounds and different cultures than it is about anything else. And I think that's what Brian realizes throughout the film franchises, when he literally puts down the badge and he says, yo, this is just as shady as whatever these people do, but you're doing it and they're paying you to do it. And you're getting, you know, paid off to get people in trouble, when in reality, these are good people who just had been dealt a, you know, a bad thing in life or bad circumstances, like a Jesse character or like other characters, side characters in the movie. When you start to learn a little bit about their backgrounds, and you realize if you put this homie in a different household or in a different place or in a different neighborhood, he could have gone to MIT. He could have been the biggest, you know, student there was. He could have been something bigger, but he didn't. And that's okay. And I feel like that's kind of where we lean to, especially in Too Fast, Too Furious. I don't know, man. I think Too Fast, Too Furious is fun. I don't know about you, RB3, really, but I feel like Roman, Tyrese's introduction is a blast in the way they kind of do the undercover thing while still being themselves and still being dope. Yeah, do it, bro. Take it off. Take it off.
No. Not today. Not today. Maybe on Patreon.
Wrap it around your hand and break glass.
Yeah.
You guys, that would break your hand, by the way. Don't do that.
Not Tyrese's hand, though. Any normal person, but not Tyrese.
Yeah. It depends on where on the window you hit it. There is a like a weak point that you could hit.
There you go.
Oh, see, engineer.
For the most part, it'll break your hand. Don't try it still. Either way, I feel like Too Fast is different, right? Because it's like the bad guy working for the badder guy. Kind of thing, which is what they do in the second film. What was your biggest takeaway from the second film, Sabrina?
Well, it's the conclusion that we got from the first one. And I didn't know in this one that we were going to kind of go off into a different direction. I did think we were going to see some of these characters again. So it was a surprise, but it was also a pleasant surprise because I thought it was really interesting how they kind of cornered him into working for them again. Like the way we saw the character of Brian at the end of the first film versus this one, it is really interesting because he does like go on that decline through the films that I saw of him already up until the fourth one. So yeah, I love the introduction of Tyrese. I thought their chemistry was amazing. So I'm really, really excited because I know he's coming back some later on in the franchise. So I'm excited.
Yeah, Brandon, what about you? I know you mentioned Too Fast and Too Furious before. Is this one of your favorites?
Yeah, it is, probably mostly for nostalgia purposes, but you know, I would say this movie and the first movie are like so quotable to me. There are so many lines of dialogue that are so memorable that I quote with some of my friends all the time, even when there's no context or reason to do so. You know, you have Tyrese doing the imitation of Verone, where he's just like, and you will take my cutter back. Like that, like just say that like amongst friends, like for no reason at all, just because it's Too Fast, Too Furious. It's such a like a fun, silly movie, and I really enjoy it. So
I that actually brings me to something, and I wasn't gonna do this, but I might as well do it. Hopefully you guys can help me out here, but what are some of your favorite lines/quotes from these first few films in the Fast and Furious franchise, whether it's the first one, whether it's the second one? Let's start with you, Brandon, since you said you had a few. I'm curious to hear some.
Yeah, obviously there's the cutter thing in the first movie where he's like, I like the tuna here. He's like, you know, BS, a-hole, and no one likes the tuna here.
And then watch your back. It just starts randomly playing.
Oh yeah. And when he pulls out his ID, his like undercover ID, and he's like, Brian Earl Spilner. That sounds like a serial killer name. Is that what you are? You know, that's a good one.
You embarrass me right after that.
Hey man, he was in my face. I'm in your face.
Yeah.
Too Fast, Too Furious. He's just like, I said, forget about it, cuh. Like, it's so silly. Yeah. It's so ridiculous.
That's the best one.
It's early 2000s. He's wearing a t-shirt that's way too big on him, but it's so good.
Pockets ain't empty, cuz.
Oh, yeah, pockets ain't empty, cuz.
That's gonna be my one right there.
That's the legendary one. Yeah. What other one, RB3, do you have?
I was literally gonna say, pockets ain't empty, cuz, and we ain't hungry no more either, bro. Yeah.
We ain't hungry no more.
Yeah, we ain't hungry no more either, cuz, or bruh. Yeah, there's a lot of good ones. After he after he punches the window, he's like, "Now put your blouse back on, hater," or something like that. Yeah, there's a lot of good quotables in Too Fast, Too Furious. I mean, there's quotables all throughout the franchise. My quotables probably come more in like the part two when we talk about 5, 6, 7, and 8. Like,
oh, for me, bro, I still think the first one has the best ones. I gotta be real. I quote the first one like all the time. Like, I literally just quoted it like 2 weeks ago. Like everything from the beginning of the movie to like, dude, I almost had you. Like, that's a memorable yeah. quote. It's like, winning's winning. Doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile, winning's winning. Or pop the hood. All these quotes to me are some of my favorite. Oh, Jesse, he's like, you can't just jump in the ring with Ali because you think you can box. And he's like, he knows I could box. As if that has anything to do with anything.
Anytime they call Brian a buster, it's like, what's the buster doing here? Well, the buster kept me out of handcuffs.
Yeah.
And I love the, and not to jump ahead, but I love the callbacks in Fast and Furious 4,
yes.
where he goes like, he's like, still a buster. Or he's like, now you owe me a 10-second car. You know, like, they like bring stuff like that back. It's so good.
Yeah.
I think there's so many memorable quotes in the first one. It's definitely one of my favorites for sure. Any ones that you like, Sabrina, that we haven't mentioned?
Basically all of them. Like when he said in the first one, and he's like, I live my life a quarter mile at a time. I was like, I know that. The second it happened, I was just like, I actually knew that. It's pretty iconic. But basically all the stuff that we said, it's just cool to be able to quote it in a group of friends. Like, it's just so memorable when we try to do our best, like Vin Diesel impressions or whatever it is. I knew it before I even watched the films. So.
Yeah. I really do feel like the film has a lot of memorable moments. And I feel like Too Fast and Furious is one of those films for sure. Go ahead, RB3.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, I mean, you talk about quotables. I mean, like I said, I was kind of joking about like how during that era there was like a lot of like black action movies. But when you look at that time, 2003, that's the same year as Bad Boys 2, the year before All About the Benjamins with Mike Epps, Ice Cube. Triple X was also that same exact year that this came out. That's why Vin Diesel wasn't in this one. So there's like all these like literal, I mean, and if you watch these movies, they all kind of align in like a weird kind of like trippy way. You almost think they're almost made like at the same time. Big Mama's House and Big Mama's House 2 was also kicking. That's a little different. That one wasn't the same. But these are all like Miami set like action movies that are just like hilarious.
Yeah. It's like the same universe.
Yeah. Almost
like cinematic universe.
Yeah, it's like almost literally like interconnected. I don't know what's going on. But I've always had that personal connection to Too Fast and Furious. And you can watch, I was on the Wenger's commentary for that one too. But I've always had a personal connection to that because it's directed by John Singleton, who's one of my favorites, one of my inspirations. I mean, you can definitely tell his style is like in there. I think that one, for me, I felt like it was very witty, and I felt like that's part of like his charm and style as well. I've read a lot of interesting like behind the scenes stories where they talk about how originally they wanted Ja Rule's character, Edwin, to come back into this movie, but then Ja Rule, I guess, was too big in like 2002. So that's when they ended up paycheck. Yeah, he should have took the paycheck. And they had to create a whole new character with Taj. That's where Taj came from. Yeah. And originally Taj was supposed to be played by Redman. But then they
Tej.
But then he ended up getting cast. Yeah, Luda ended up getting cast for it. So I liked it. I also love the fact that apparently Vin Diesel turned down a $25 million offer for this film.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's what he claims at least. But I really, for me personally, even though it's a little corny, it's a little cheesy, I still think it's really good. And I think more people need to highlight it in their Fast and Furious recognition.
You know what killed it for me? Because hearing you talk about it, I did really, really enjoy so many of those aspects. Eva Mendez's character. It was such a shame. I thought she was so wasted. If you see her, she's literally just in the background looking attractive, making like a straight face. She barely has like any dialogue or screen time. I think I totally forgot, but that's what like killed it for me, especially even like towards the end. when she was actually in and like doing all this stuff, there was something really interesting to like work with her, and they just didn't. She was like completely kind of shoved to the side as a character. So that was my only criticism, and that's what lowered it down a little bit for me.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting character for sure. She definitely plays that, you know, love interest for Brian, and typical, you know, Latina girl they had to bring in Miami because there's a lot of Latinas in Miami. And I feel like once that movie opens, you kind of, I don't know about you guys, but you kind of get the vibe that it's also kind of what I brought up top when you see the Puerto Rican homie who's from Prison Break start speaking Spanish. And then you see Michael Ealy. Yeah. You see the Japanese girl, I forget her name too.
Devin Aoki, I believe.
Yes. And then you see, obviously Brian shows up with the skyline, but you see Ludacris come out with his fro, and his song starts playing, as he comes out, which I think is hysterical, which is the theme song of the movie Too Fast, Too Furious. I think it's called, what is it called? Like Bust a Fool? Something like that.
Or Act a Fool.
Either way, like Ludacris like changed this for me, y'all. Like I told you guys off camera, but I have a major connection to Ludacris, and like on the low, like I was raised on his music, like high key, where all I listened to was him for years when I was a little kid. So seeing him in the second movie just changed my life, because I was like, yo, that's the boy, that's the homie. Shout out to Chicken and Beer. I really did feel like that was a fun character to have. And he was low key, like Luda is like, he's low key a good actor. Like there's a list of like actor rappers and rapper actors, but he's like, I was talking to my parents about it because we were talking about it. And I was like, he's low key good. Like he's low key not bad. I've seen worse performances from actors. And obviously now in the franchise, he has a major role. But for me, Too Fast, Too Furious has that connection when it has that typical kind of a bad boys feel, if you really think about it, RB3, I kind of like what you said, right? Because exactly, it's the typical Miami Cuban drug lord or some crap. And the typical like Latina love interest, which is Eva Mendes. And then it has the Latino thugs who are like the Mexican
or something. That whole subgenre, it's a subgenre.
And you have Tyrese trying to speak Spanish to insult him and stuff. And it's like, yeah, why not? It's really that kind of goofy, you know, fun action film that I think a lot of people appreciate. Before we go to break, guys, real quick, I told you guys we wanted to do this up top, but let's do it now. Let's pick our favorite or best or coolest, most iconic, whatever you want to say, car of the franchise, of the Fast and Furious franchise. What do you guys feel like is the best car in the Fast and Furious franchise? I'm going to go to you first, Sabrina, because I feel like you have yours up top.
Okay, so one thing is I don't know anything about cars. I don't even have my license. I've driven 15 minutes total in my entire life. I think a lot of these cars are so sick. There's a ton that I don't know the names of from the second movie, the green one, all of those really stand out. But one, just because there's so many memorable scenes with it, the 1970 Dodge Charger that Dom drives in the first film. Yeah, that one's awesome. I love classic. Seeing that one on screen. It was beautiful.
Yeah, Dom's Charger is definitely one of a lot of people's favorites because it's definitely the most classic one for sure. Yeah. And what he about? It's like this epic moment in the first movie where it's like he presents it. It's like the Dodge Charger. And it's like this old school, cool muscle car. And obviously when it does the wheelie thing at the end of the movie, it's ridiculous, but it's awesome. Because again, I don't know about you, Brandon, but I don't know if that would actually happen in real life. Since you're the engineer, I go to you for my car facts, but
I have to look into it.
I don't know if it could do that. That'd be wild. RB3, what about you? What's your favorite car of the franchise?
I have a couple. There's one. There's a couple. I love the F-bomb Chevy Camaro that you see in the third one, Tokyo Drift. And there's also, I love the Nissan Skyline from the very first one. Obviously as Brian's fast. Car.
That's too fast.
Yeah, that's right. And the one that's like my absolute favorite, which, is in, it's not in the fourth one. It's only in the fifth one. So we're not going to talk about this movie till next week, but it's the Corvette Grand Sport, the one that they jump off at the very beginning in Fast Five.
Damn, bro.
That to me was the coolest.
That's a nice car, bro.
I know. It's a nice car. And they had to, that to me was like the changing point in the franchise. Like, then they starting out with the car diving into the ocean. Like, they throwing away the cars like that. It's bigger than cars now. It's
spoiler.
Yeah. It's bigger than that.
The first one, the classic one, the one that I feel like made the statement in the first movie was that green eclipse that Brian had. And they blow it up in like 30 minutes into the movie or 20 minutes into the movie. And I was like, yo, that was my favorite car in the franchise. And they go from that to the Supra, which obviously a lot of people like the Supra, which I think is kind of funny because they went from there to the Toyota, another Japanese brand. And then obviously you'll see like Jesse's car, you see the Honda from the other homie. But I do feel like for me, it's a toss up between the Skyline and the Eclipse, but you mentioned the Skyline already. Also shout out to Roman's Eclipse Spider, the convertible. I think that's just fun. Yeah. And also the Lancer, Brian's Lancer. No one likes the Lancer, but I do. I think it's a cool car. It's the orange one that he drives in Too Fast, Too Furious, I think is a cool one too.
And the one you're talking about with Roman's was the purple one, correct? Was purple that the purple one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that spider. One was sick. Yeah.
That's a cool one. And I love the goofy sticker designs on the outside, like early 2000s. Like, yo, we out here. But I'd go with the green eclipse. Brandon, do you have one?
I think I'm gonna have to agree with Sabrina. Dom's car is just super iconic. Like for this franchise, it's the one of the first things that comes to mind. You know, you go on the Universal Studios tour, they have like a section of like screen used cars. And there's like a few from Fast and Furious, a few from Too Fast, Too Furious. And I think you see Dom's car there as well. And to me, that's like, especially like in terms of like Universal Studios, to me, that's gotta be all getting up there almost as iconic as the DeLorean in Back to the Future is like Dom's car from the Fast and the Furious. So I mean, how could I not pick that?
I think they have Roman's car too, right? They have the purple eclipse here, right?
I think so, yeah. I have some pictures on my phone. I'll have to look through them.
Yeah.
I'll post them on Twitter.
I feel like those are classic too, the first ones. I think the first ones are the most classic in my opinion. The Charger, the Eclipse, the Supra, and then the Skyline. Because the Skyline is like, it's dope with the gray and the blue. And it's
I love the Skyline.
I drive that now. I low-key drive that now. I drive that now. I'll unabashedly, unashamed drive it. What are you gonna say, Sabrina?
Also, going back to the first film, there's so many iconic Los Angeles locations that we notice that they're using through different like drives or whatever. Literally yesterday we went to the Toretto house. It's like a mile or two away from us in Echo Park, and then right down the street from that they have the market with the tuna that nobody gets. Yeah. So it's really, really cool. Even like during some of the chases, like I see streets that are right down the street. It's kind of awesome. Like how, I don't know, just like seeing Los Angeles through this lens of Fast and the Furious.
Yeah. It leaves you a part to give a little love to and the movies as well. But yeah, I like you said, Sabrina, they are literally like right in Echo Park. Especially like now, I was literally just over there like earlier today, or at least the day that we're recording this. And yeah, that house and that little side food marketplace is like also right there. So in case people are wondering, you know.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun to have those little iconic movie locations. I think that's always a cool thing to have. Final thing, shout out to I was telling you guys off camera, shout out to the Toretto house. I just got reminded when Area Codes plays in that, I just think it's so funny when Area Codes plays in the background, and then in the next movie Ludacris shows up. It's like in universe crossover type stuff. I always think that's a lot of fun where they're like, we need a rapper, and Ja Rule was in this one. Ja Rule low-key might have had the most memorable line with the Monica. I still quote that too. I quoted that with Paul Pierce. Shout out to my homie Paul Pierce with Monica. A couple weeks ago, he got in trouble for that.
Yeah,
he got fired off ESPN for that. So, RIP Paul Pierce. Anyways, we're going to go to break, guys. And after the break, we're going to be talking about
this ain't funny. money, so don't you dare laugh. With the 450 divide you in half. You getting at me equals a club half. You do the math, take you out the equation. This ain't funny, so don't you dare laugh.
I've seen my parents die 277 times.
I'm worried you only have like 2 attempts left.
I might just have to go in.
Into the house with armed robbers.
I'm not willing to waste the last 2.
Timestamp, premiering one time, exclusively this Friday. All First Cut Patreons are invited.
Come along, children. Now we're going to have a little music.
What is up, guys? We're back talking about the Fast and Furious franchise. Let's go to Tokyo Drift. I feel like this is the biggest, like, you're either on Team Tokyo Drift or you're either not on Tokyo Drift team. I am so curious to hear your thoughts, but I think you have thoughts, Sabrina, so I'm going to go to you first. Are you on hashtag Team Tokyo Drift?
No, that was the one that lost me. For a minute, I literally actually my first watch through, I knew that it took place at a different time. I still don't know where it fits in with the timeline. Obviously, we're introduced to the character of Han. Lucas Black is in it. I just feel like we've progressed past the need for Lucas Black in films anyways. So I just think that he was not the best lead. I don't think it like holds up super well because I don't find him to be as captivating as what we got in the previous films. It's just not the same effect, unfortunately, as like a leading man. But I skipped Tokyo Drift, went to 4, and then went back to Tokyo Drift. So I was already introduced to Han. And of course, with like the trailers and stuff, I'm very aware of that character. But yeah, Tokyo Drift was not 100% for me based off of the reasons that I said earlier.
Was it mainly the lead? I feel like Lucas it's Black's just, character
I think it so lost, stale. Yeah, that's what it just lost every single charm of like Fast and Furious. So it wasn't even necessarily the direction or the story. It was just, I didn't get the vibes. Like you could pluck this out. I could have just watched 1, 2, and 4. I would have been completely fine.
What do you think about Tokyo Drift, Brandon? And how did you feel about changing the franchise with a new cast of characters, new location, new style of street racing?
I'm very much on Team Tokyo Drift. I love this movie. I know Lucas Black, the person, maybe a little problematic, but Sean Boswell, the character, you want to talk about quotable lines. It's like, what's DK stand for? Donkey Kong? He's like, and when he's looking at the video of his crash in the beginning, he's like, can I get a copy of that? Like, just like dumb lines like that throughout the movie. I love it so much. It's ridiculous. I love the drifting aspect of it. It's like this gimmick they use for the movie, but it works. It's like, oh man, that's so cool. Like, I want to go out and try that and probably wreck my car, so I won't actually do it. But man, yeah, like, it's cool to watch. Yeah, it's cool to watch it on TV. But no, I really love this movie. And yeah, it is a bit of a change of pace, you know, like, you know, Too Fast, Too Furious was also a change of pace on its own. You still had Brian, you still had that one guy from the FBI that was in the first movie. But other than that, those are the only two characters that return in Too Fast, Too Furious. You're introduced to new characters, like a side quest of a story almost. And then Tokyo Drift just goes full blown. Like, nope, these are brand new characters that you are seeing for the first time. But the way that they were able in later movies to kind of like retcon and course correct and integrate it into the story like very seamlessly, it watching it back is like, I feel like it's just kind of like a treat to like see how it all kind of plays into the franchise later on. But I really love it. And you, hey, you do get Dom at the very end of the movie, so
yeah,
that's cool too. And Han's great. Han is one of the Han's best characters. Awesome.
And obviously Justin Lin is kind of taking over the franchise here. Did he do Too Fast as well? No, it was John Singleton. I apologize. This is Justin Lin's first entry into the Fast and Furious franchise, which is why obviously he put Han in the movie. Mm-hmm. Also, if you guys want to talk about quotable lines, the greatest line in the Fast and Furious franchise is in this movie. It was, she was just admiring my ride. And then the guy in the back is like, my ride, just making fun of his accent. It's just ridiculous. I love
the
it.
Grift? What you mean drift?
Yeah, the guy's accent is epic. I can't lie. Yeah. But I feel like it kind of introduced a different vibe and a different culture, obviously, with the Japanese street racing kind of culture that was, you know, kind of popular during that time period. What do you think about Tokyo Drift RB3?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Tokyo Drift. I haven't really been.
No. Bow Wow, bro.
I do love Bow Wow. I love Bow Wow being in this movie, little Bow Wow. I love that this is Justin Lin's intro into the franchise, because it's like the most like insular and like the most like off kilter. It's funny because there was a point in Hollywood, there's a point in time in like the 2000s of Hollywood where they would just make sequels to movies that would just be like not connected to them like whatsoever, you know? And that's what Too Fast, Too Furious was to one extent. And that's what this movie was even a further evolution of. Like, they didn't have any of their stars, like, and they shot the Vin Diesel post credit or the Vin Diesel ending like way after there was like really poor test screening. So Universal fully intended for this franchise to be like a different race car adventure per country, and I think that basing it in Japan for one gave a lot of interesting options for the actual culture of drifting, because that is something that originated in Japanese racing in general. But then also it gives an opportunity for a different, like, just a location in general, like outside of America, to show that it's not necessarily an Americana kind of thing. And I think when we look at like Justin Lin's previous film, Better Luck Tomorrow, you know, that's a film all about like just like these regular bored high school students who just start getting into like crimes like after school just because they're just like kind of bored. And I feel like that's a little bit of what this movie is to some extent. Like, it is about like Lucas Black looking to street racing as like his escape from like his underwhelming or unsatisfactory lifestyle at home, and using that to vibe out into his community. So it's kind of cool. I do like that aspect of it. It's kind of weird that this movie technically is set in 2013, but like they're using like brick phones and old cars. It's kind of strange. But whatever. Beyond that, I really enjoy this movie. I enjoy it, but I don't like really love it, you know.
What do you guys feel is the most memorable scene in this movie, Sabrina?
Anything with like Han, I thought he's really great, but honestly, like also the ending with Dom. After that, I was like, okay, we're finally back on track. So that's why it's the most memorable for me, because besides that, I was just not into it as much. I do feel like maybe if I grew up watching these and I kind of watched them as they were released, it might have been a little bit different to go on this journey. But since I know that we get back on track, this was just underwhelming.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because I feel like obviously we have Han, we have the Lucas Black character, we have Bow Wow, we have his love interest, who I believe is like Australian. Or something, right? She's like Australian, right? I think she has that heavy Aussie accent, or Kiwi. She might be New Zealand, but she looks like she has that accent to her, which is kind of an interesting choice that Justin Lin chose to make the love interest not, you know, an Asian girl or a Japanese girl at least. Which I think he might have been wanting to avoid maybe the stereotype of like, mm-hmm. you know, going into Japan and meeting a Japanese girl. And I think he might've been wanting to avoid that. But on the most part, I feel like the Japanese play a foil type character. You know, out of the main cast, I don't think there's a major Japanese character inside that core cast, which is kind of interesting, obviously, because Han is Korean, very clearly Korean, in the movie as well. And it's one of those things where I find that super interesting, but it's also like an appreciation of Japanese culture and Japan and love towards like the Asian community inside this like street racing community and car community in general. Because if we realize it, kind of like what I said in the first half of this episode, you got Mitsubishi Toyota, Honda are like the three main cars in the first movie, and those are all Japanese imported cars. And I feel, and well, yeah, but Nissan too, but that's the second film. But I'm saying in the first film, those are like the three main ones. And I feel like it's kind of an interesting aspect of like, if we're using these cars that are Japanese and they're imported cars, we should probably do something that features them as well. What did you think of that decision, RB3, to do that?
No, I think that's brilliant. I think I love that. Well, for one, it's actually representing a culture that like is that builds the cars that they are, you know, that they're racing in, right? So like, it's kind of appropriate. I do think there is like an interest. I never really thought about how there isn't like a Japanese character in the main group, but you know, just in the same way that street racing is kind of like an outsider sport, they're kind of like outsiders in this foreign country as well. Like,
yeah, they're all, it's like a fish out of water kind of story, right?
Yeah, exactly. They're all coming to their own with that same community that brought people together from the first two movies and cars and driving and the mechanics and then, you know, street racing. That same community brings these all fish out of water people together to, you know, drift in Tokyo.
Finally, let's move on to the final film we will be talking about today. I want to start with you, RB3, because you said this is one of your favorites, and that's Fast and Furious. This movie features a great fight scene between Brian and Vin Diesel, which remember that fight scene? That's ridiculous, absolutely, but it's fun nonetheless. And it features a lot of Mia. Shout out to Mia. She's definitely one of the most underrated characters in the franchise. But what about this movie makes it one of your favorites?
Well, I felt like this was like the official reboot. Like, I felt like this was like, maybe not an official reboot, but this was them being like, all right, enough's enough. We're going to take this franchise seriously and we're going to do it right. And we're just like going to stick our heads down and like make sure we do it. And by the way, I think this movie has like a 30% or some like crazy low number on Rotten Tomatoes. But I think that's a little unfair. I think it was during a time period where people were just ready to trash on Fast and Furious movies. But I think if you look at the merit of it, it is actually a kind of interesting, like crime drama, like at the heart of it. Cause when you, like you said earlier, Ace, it is literally all about Brian becoming unraveled by his police station, being a cop, and seeing how much corruption is going on, particularly at the border, right? Particularly and the role and involvement that they're, you know, that police are having and that situation. So now there's that conflict happening at the same time that Dom is just trying to start his own like normal, like regular schmegular type of life. But he got people breathing down his neck too, and he has to do like this one last mission to like get out of the whole thing. And to me, this is like, I don't know. To me, it's like such a classic like crime movie like setup where it's like the two, like the criminal, like the robber. I don't know how it's like the what they call the cop and the robber are kind of going back to back. But in this movie, this is like the one where they're actually like coming together. Like by halfway through the movie, they're actually like teamed up and fully on the same page. I think that's just like such a cool subversion, especially based on what we have saw so far of the franchise. We saw Brian have his little bit of evolution in part two. And then we see Vin Diesel, he's already just down for the stuff, but he's ready to move on. He's ready to start a family. And after seeing Michelle Rodriguez's character killed, after seeing Letty get killed, that to me is one of the most, you know, memorable moments to me in the Fast and Furious franchise too, seeing, or when he thinks Letty gets killed. There's just so many cool moments in this movie. I feel like they literally were like, all right, let's take the dark and gritty approach. Let's make this like the Dark Knight of the Fast and Furious franchise. Like, let's really like desaturate the colors and let's take out all the fancy cars and all that and just make it pure crime story. And I think they succeeded for a decent amount of it.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because it's Justin Lin coming back from Tokyo Drift, Sabrina. So it's interesting, like this is so different from Tokyo Drift. How'd you feel about this movie, especially as a follow-up to Tokyo Drift?
I did really enjoy it, how they brought everything back together and they kind of came back to the foundation that they were setting up, because that's where I feel like in this franchise so far that they've really succeeded. And everything that I've heard about Fast and Furious, like later on, people really do focus on all of their chemistry together, like how they feel like a family, even seeing Jordana Brewster and Paul Walker reunite. Like you get that warmth, you get that energy and that chemistry from them. Same thing with Dom and Paul Walker, like that chumminess, that like the way they go back and forth throughout like the first half of this film, I just really, really enjoyed it. And that's exactly what I was missing. So I think this one gets me way, way, way more excited to finish out the rest of the franchise, because I feel like now they found their footing again for what I enjoyed.
Yeah, Brandon, how do you feel like this stacks up to the other movies as far as Too Fast, Too Furious, The Fast and Furious, and Tokyo Drift? What does this kind of rank for you between those four films?
Yeah, well, you know, I think I agree a lot with what RB3 was saying, how I really enjoy this movie, and it is kind of like that Prisoner of Azkaban of the Fast and Furious saga, where it's this tonal shift. It's like, okay, we're gonna take things in a different direction now. And, you know, it's not just about like the street racing or like, you know, this or that anymore. And there's like, you know, we have Brian in the first movie. He's an undercover cop, and there's like hints of like him maybe wanting to work his way up to being in the FBI. And, you know, after the events of Too Fast, Too Furious, his record's clear and he does end up going into the FBI. And like you said, Andres, at the end of this movie, when Dom helps bring down Braga and he still gets sentenced 25 years to life, that's when Brian was like, all right, like the system doesn't work. Cops are just as in the wrong, you know, like I'm going to go be with my chosen family. And that leads to him once again becoming a criminal on the run to help out Dom into the subsequent movies. But it's hard for me to rank them. You know, I agree with, like, it is a very different movie. It's Justin Lin coming back. It's a very different movie from Tokyo Drift. And the cinematography is much different. Like you said, like the saturation, the colors are very different. But, you know, Justin Lin, I feel like, is one of the key factors of the heart of this franchise, which is why I'm so excited for him coming back for F9. But yeah, I'll say it's hard for me to like rank it. Like, I don't know. I love all these movies so much, but I will say I 100% agree with RB3, where there's a lot of people out there who don't appreciate this movie. I appreciate it much more than a lot of the people, even in the Fast and Furious fan base. I think this is a movie for people who loved the original film, because like I said earlier with the quotes and everything, there are so many fun callbacks to the original that, you know, just like they touch at the nostalgia in just the right way, where it's not like overly gratuitous and it's actually really charming and fun.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because I feel like these three movies, the first three, have a slightly different tone than the last one, but even the first one might be more similar in tone. Mm-hmm. The first one and then the fourth one might be more similar in tone. But when people define the Fast and Furious franchise, and I think I'll end it here, it's always by the first four and then now Fast Five kind of shifted tonally completely by making it slightly elevated, right? I always think about it as grounded and elevated. And then there's like, you know, crazy flying in midair, where it's essentially like a cartoon now. A superhero movie, right? where the first four films are grounded technically, and then the second four films are elevated or off the ground. They're kind of like rules don't apply is essentially what it is. How do you guys feel, which do you guys feel resonates more with you, if you're being real, if you're being honest, don't say the stereotypical answer. What about you, Sabrina? Have you seen the final four films? So does
not
this
yet.
Apply to you?
I'm going to be started literally
I'm curious
right
to hear
this.
Your answer to this question. But I think I'll start with you, RB3, then, if you have an answer. Which ones resonate with you the most?
Like which films or which characters?
Which films? The first four or the last four?
Definitely the last four for me. I like the first four as like a good like foundation for what it, you know, what all comes to. But to me, it's like, they're like phase one and phase two.
What do you think about that shift then? That shift in tone and that shift in,
I liked it. I liked
grounded
it.
And then slightly off the ground.
Oh, I mean, I don't think it was, I think it was maybe ground is not the right word for Fast and Furious for this, for the fourth one, because
the first few films are little, like, there's not flying cars, bro.
Oh, I mean, they're grounded. They're grounded. They're grounded in the sense that, like, they're grounded in the sense that they're not doing over the top stuff. Yes. They're not grounded in, like, the stylistic perspective. Like, they are very, like, stylized. They are very neon color. They are very, like, you know, very poppy in that aesthetic. And I think as the films go on, they definitely take that style away in favor for more like the blockbuster action, like, kind of tone. So I think in that sense, yeah, the first four are, like, really good, like, pieces that are like intros and get people warmed up. And I think the second four are really the blockbuster action superhero movies that people, you know, are wanting in this generation, this time period. But it'd be kind of weird to go back to that same kind of aesthetic, you know, now. You know, I think in Fast 9, if they were to go back to just purely racing, people get freaked out about it. So,
yeah. What do you think about that shift, Brandon?
Yeah, you know, for me, my initial instinct was to just kind of go with what everyone else is saying, like, oh yeah, well, the last four have been like so popular and so fun to see at the theater. But you know, the first four, like, we talked about the quotes, the memorable moments, the nostalgia factor, the whole street racing dynamic. You know, I, you know, really loved, you know, watching these movies back in Connecticut, where I'm from, with my best friend from back home. And he loves these movies so much because he loves cars and he loves the whole like culture of street racing and all that. So bonding with him over these movies, you know, in high school and college and everything, there's a certain part of that that I attribute to me kind of gravitating towards these first four more. But I will say 5, 6, and 7 are probably the best like trilogy of the whole franchise. If you were to just like isolate a trilogy, 5, 6, and 7, I think is really solid. I love Furious 7. I think what James Wan was able to do with that movie, especially under the circumstances of the passing of Paul Walker, Furious 7 is an incredible entry in this franchise and up there is one of my favorites.
And we're going to be talking about it in the part two aspect of this meaning of episodes next week, guys. We're going to be talking about 5, 6, 7, and 8. I definitely have thoughts on a lot of those movies, guys. So be on the lookout for that. Either way, guys, that concludes our episode for the Fast and Furious franchise. Sabrina, where can everyone find you?
You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at SabrinaXMonica. Also on Twitter at Sabrina on Film. Great.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at BrandaHanna07.
And RB3.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at DirectorRB3. And you can find the virtual premiere of Timestamp happening this Friday. If you're First Cut Patreon, be sure to check us out on the First Cut Patreon page. And you'll be able to watch Timestamp with us.
And you can find me on Twitter at Squad Leader Race. Obviously, follow us on Twitter as well at First Cut DMO and subscribe if you haven't done so already. As I said before, guys, this is our part one. We will be doing a part two, so be on the lookout for that. Either way, guys, for the First Cut crew, we're peacing out. Peace.